So, going back to the nature of the mind-turning reflections, well, traditionally, this particular reflection on karma and karma vipaka, traditionally, it's seen as two things. It's seen as reminding ourselves of the danger of rebirth in lower realms. So it's the waking us up to the fact that if we practice, if we commit unskillful actions, we're building up painful experience in lower realms. And we can also understand this in terms of, well, we're building up a painful existence for ourselves. We're building up confusion, doubt, painful experience, suffering. But the other side of that, the other side of the wake-up call, is that there's massive potential benefit to acting skillfully. So traditionally, we often reflect on the benefits of a practice. So we can reflect on the benefits of skillful actions. We can change ourselves for a start. It is the way in which we change ourselves. So we change ourselves by acting skillfully. We change others' experience of us, and we change our experience of the world. So there's these three connected ways in which we bring about transformation by choosing to act skillfully. And I'm going to go into each of these headings a little bit. So first of all, in terms of changing ourself, well, changing ourself is, we've probably got a sense that it's about, well, what are we? We're trying to change our being, we're trying to change our consciousness, we're trying to change our essence, our nature. And there's a danger of thinking that we're of somehow misunderstanding the nature of change. There's a danger of thinking that we'll still be who we are, but we'll just understand things differently. So the danger in spiritual life of thinking that we'll still be essentially who we are, we'll be able to hold on to that, but we'll just have understood something. We'll have done enough reading, we've read enough books, and we'll have enough grasp of enough dharmic formulations, and somehow that will mean that everything's different. But actually, as I was saying, in terms of the nature of change actually has to be very gradual. We have to lay the foundations, we have to prepare the foundations. The whole thing about the path of gradual steps is that we do the work, we do the gradual steps, and then radical transformation, real transformation will arise, but we can't force it, we can't make it happen, we can't choose to make it happen. We have to just keep preparing the ground. So, for example, in meditation, we understand that the importance of dhyanic mental states, for example, is not that they're an end in themselves, but that if we have some experience of dhyana, it has an effect on our consciousness. When we're in dhyana, we're in a very, very different state of consciousness. And with a bit of familiarity with that, and a bit of that having a longer lasting effect, apparently our consciousness becomes more pliable and more amenable to being able to actually absorb and make use of an experience of insight. So it's not that insight doesn't, we'll all have had moments of insight, and they will have had an effect on us, but for them to really have a long-lasting transformative effect on us, we need to have loosened up our consciousness. We need to have prepared it. It needs to be habitually more positive and more receptive and less identified, less fixed. And the practice of ethics too. So speaking of somebody who doesn't experience a lot of dhyana, I find it very reassuring that the practice of ethics kind of is working on the same ground. Because the practice of ethics, the practice of practicing skillfully, So the practice of karma in terms of skillful actions is not just about becoming more skillful and that therefore the action, the consequences will be that we're happier. This seems to be something that we hit it over and over again in our spiritual lives. It's so easy to end up with the view that somehow we're practicing in order to just make samsara more acceptable. I'm sure this is something Maitreya will be going into. So ultimately, the motivation for practicing spiritually and for practicing ethically is that ultimately we're trying to transcend karma altogether. It's something that's quite hard to get our heads around. But the Buddha had gone beyond being skillful or unskillful. It's something we don't... It is hard to imagine. It sounds a bit blank. But there comes a point where, although karma vipaka may still be playing itself out, we no longer need to act, to be making that choice to act skillfully or unskillfully, because our whole being, our whole consciousness is so different that we just naturally are responding from a basis of understanding of reality. And that's of a different order to simply being skillful or unskillful. Being skillful is kind of by definition a duality. It's the opposite of being unskillful. So while we've got that choice, we're still having to make that choice, that effort to be skillful. But there comes a time when it just would be our nature to be compassionate and wise, because that's how we would be. But we have to begin by transforming ourselves, and one way in which we do this is ethically. So we're changing from a narrow, tight, self-interested experience of the world to something that's broader, more flexible, more empathic. We can get a sense of that shift in quality. And this is what we need to do. In a way, and one way of looking at the practice of ethics is that it is how an enlightened being would naturally be. So although we're practicing on a different level and we're practicing in a rather imperfect way, the fact that we make the effort to practice skillfully gradually changes our being. It's as though you have these two scales. The scales are very useful in terms of explaining how change comes about. So it's as though we're just dropping seeds of skillfulness in one side of the scales, or unskillfulness in the other side of the scales. And at some point, out of all those little drops, something shifts. And this happens at different times in our spiritual life, this shift. It happens at stream entry, it happens at enlightenment, where qualitatively there's a whole shift in the process. But we need to be doing these little drops. We need to be doing that in order for that shift to then come about. And there's a very deep-seated change that we're trying to bring about. We're trying to root out ignorance, craving, hatred. But we can't really get at it immediately. We can't get at it head on. As I say, we have to work at it from this point of skillfulness until such time as we are in a different kind of relationship with the world, and then something happens. And the Yogacara has a model for this, which I'm going to manage not to go into in too much detail this time, which says that at the heart of our delusion and the root of our craving is the fact that we have four delusions about self. These are the four Atma kleshas. And they are self-view, or Atma drishti, self-delusion, or Atma moha, self-conceit, Atma mana, and attachment to self, which is Atma sneha. So self-view is the collection of views we have about ourselves. We think that we're substantial. We think that we're something we can rely on and get hold of. And the other side of that is that it's a delusion. Actually, there is no fixed self. And another side to this is self-conceit, which is, it's that we are the center of the universe. It's just, it's this conceit of our experiences very deeply, that we are where everything is. And attachment to self, which goes with that, is that, and we are wonderful. We're very deeply attached to ourselves. This may also take, it can take a sort of perverted form of the opposite of that, but essentially we're very, very important to ourselves. And the usefulness of the Yogacara model is that this is hardwired. It's just how we are. It's a bit like the way our consciousness is. We can only make sense of things in terms of time and space, but actually they're just relative. They're not absolute things. They're part of our relative reality, but we can't experience outside of them. It's the nature of human beings to have experience in a particular way. And part of our experience, the nature of our experience, is to have this wrong, deluded understanding of ourselves. And that is the problem. That's what we're trying to root out. That's what we're trying to transform. But we can't get it at it head on. So although it's really, really important we do get down to these views and these experiences, we also, what's helpful about this model is that we shouldn't give ourselves a hard time for having these views, having these wrong views. They're not an ethical matter as such. There's nothing, you know, we can't immediately do anything about them. They're just how we are. And in fact, we maybe need to approach them quite differently. So we approach them sideways, we approach them gradually, we approach them by practicing ethically, by practicing skillfully, until such time as our experience is a much more positive one. Our relationship between self and other is much more positive. And then what happens as a basis of having created a much more skillful, a much more in line with reality experience, is that one of these shifts can then take place. So it's not something that we make happen, but it's as though we can prepare the ground, and then at some point some fundamental shift happens. It's called a turning about in the deepest seat of consciousness. And that's when wisdom really arises. That's when ignorance is really transformed. So the practice of ethics does actually go a very long way, because ethics is about karma. Ethics is about the relationship between self and other, and fundamentally that is the root of all our delusion and our craving. So ethics, our practice of ethics, is a gradual process with enormous potential and implications. That if you follow a logical conclusion of that, it is a path which takes us all the way to enlightenment. It's not separate from the practice of meditation and the practice of the arising of wisdom. It's a continual process, but we start with ethics, and that is where we need to start.